Hi, I'm Jordan.
And this is Nick.
And together we're
Film Shake! This is no ordinary episode right here.
This is most extraordinary, for sure, as we only ever talk about movies that were made in the 90s, right, Nick?
That's right, unless it's a bonus episode. Though, we are talking one 90s movie in this episode.
That's right, that's how it all ties together. Gotta keep our brand on point here. Today, we're here to talk about three movies. You might be familiar with these little gems, might have heard of these. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure from 1989, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey from 1991, and of course, the newly released 2020 film starring Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter back again, reprising their roles as Bill and Ted for Bill and Ted Face the Music, which we just watched, not even a day ago. So we're here to talk about all those. We're going to give you an in-depth, I guess you could say, in-depth review of each of those. So I'm guessing we're going to go into spoilers a little bit for the third film, right, Nick?
Yeah, I think we're just going to go all out.
Yeah, I mean, it's Bill and Ted. You got to go all out. So if you haven't seen that film yet, or any of these films, you should stop right now, because what are you doing with your life? You need Bill and Ted
in your life to win it.
So
if you want a bodacious life, get into the movies. If you want a bogus life, don't watch them.
That is true. That is how you succeed in life. I am super psyched to talk about all these films. Rewatched the first two in one night. Just had to get all the Bill and Ted in my life that I could. And then, yeah, we had to rent Bill and Ted Face the Music for $20 on Vudu. So we ended up with splitting the bill. And I think you watched it with your family, right?
I did. So I watched the whole trilogy with my son this week. And my wife made periodic appearances. She has a little bit of trouble staying awake at night. So if you start a movie really early, she can get through it. But if you start a movie after 6:30 p.m., she ain't going to get through
it. Oh, wow. That's really so early.
She made it through Excellent Adventure, which she had seen, you know, many times when she was younger, and we all enjoyed that. And then she fell asleep, an hour in A Bogus Journey, an hour in A Face the Music. Oh. Not because she wasn't enjoying them. She was a lot.
Right. But she's just a narcoleptic. Right.
She'll be the first to say it. Yes.
Well, and this was your first time seeing Bogus Journey, right? So
that's right. And once we get into that movie, I'll talk about why. It's one of the greatest omissions of my life until now.
Right.
But yes.
You probably feel like a sense of peace, a sense of relief in your life now that you've completed this full journey. So yeah, I'm waiting to hear about that.
Oh, yeah. But I think before we talk about any, we got to go back to the beginning with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
That's right. So set it up for us just for those who need a refresher or haven't seen the film and are going to continue listening against our advice.
Hey, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. You can listen to us anyway. I mean, we'd rather you watch the movies than listen. Just hit pause. But if you're not going to do that, here's a plot synopsis for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So Bill and Ted are two really sweet, good-natured guys who also maybe aren't the brightest bulbs in the socket. Maybe they're not LED. They're an older, smaller wattage, but they're great dudes, and they're really set on their band Wild Stallions. The only problem is they don't really know how to play their instruments, but it's all good. The only issue is they're flunking history. It turns out them flunking history is really bad for history in general, because apparently Bill and Ted, as Wild Stallions, are going to write a song that's going to unite the world. So Rufus, played by George Carlin, has to come back in time, pick up Bill and Ted, and send them on their most excellent adventure in a time-traveling phone booth. This isn't Doctor Who. it might make you think about Doctor Who, because the TARDIS is a police box, which is kind of a phone booth, but this is an American
this
movie
is the American
with an
version,
American
right.
telephone booth.
In front of the Circle K, inside the phone booth.
That's right. So our friends Bill and Ted travel through time, meeting and kidnapping various historical icons and taking them into the future so that they can pass history, so that they can continue in their band, because if Ted flunks out of history, he's going to get sent to military school in Alaska by his father. Majorly bogus.
Major.
They've got to pass this report. They've got all these past icons with them. Hijinks ensue. What's going to happen? Are they going to fail? And is history doomed?
And fail most heinously, as Bill would say.
Most heinously.
Yes.
Yes. Or will they succeed? They succeed, because there's two more of these. So.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. Of
Spoiler
course.
Alert.
Spoiler alert. They do pass history. Yes. Yeah, so instead of taking the time, using the time machine to go back in time to give themselves, what, another semester to study history? No, let's just kidnap some famous dudes.
Yes.
But somehow they learn all the facts about those famous people. So they had to have spent some of that extra time in the past studying to some degree, some way. That would be bogus to see in a movie, right? So we're not going to spend any time on that. That's not any fun.
Even though they can't pronounce any of these historical figures' names either, I love Socrates. That was always my
favorite. And Freud. Hey, it's
Sigmund Freud.
So good.
I think this movie is pretty large in the fabric of both of our lives. How did you come to know Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Man, I don't even remember. It feels like it's always been there. I just grew up watching this, and I had seen and watched the second one plenty of times as well, but I feel like I've seen this movie 100 times growing up as a kid. Just loved it. Of course, it's become a huge thing within the pop culture and within the lexicon, because as listeners of the show know, Nick and I have this ingrained into us to some degree, because we do say dude and man and awesome and excellent a lot. So looking back
Very
on this
much.
Film, I'm like, oh yeah. I'm a dumb idiot like Bill and Ted. I'm still a dumb idiot at 34. No. I love this film, and it's so fun. I can just remember sitting in my room with all my friends watching this on TV and probably not getting half of the historical jokes, but getting all of the modern contemporary American jokes and just the stupid guys using really big eloquent language in fun ways. Somehow that still lands, and it's still great and fun as ever. So it just feels like it's always been a part of my life.
Most excellent. So for me, I've talked about the giant satellite dish that I had in my yard. So I grew up in an extremely rural area. Just to let you know how rural, my family moved back out there in 2011. We lived there until 2018. Going back to where I grew up, internet providers don't service that area. Not even HughesNet. You can't even get satellite internet there, which is ironic, because the way that we got our TV when I was a kid was a gigantic satellite dish. We're talking, you know, school bus sized satellite dish. We eventually, when technology improved, we got like a van sized satellite dish. But back in those days, mid to late 80s, satellite TV was kind of like the Wild Wild West. It was total insanity.
Like the movie?
Exactly.
Will Smith was in your TV then? Yeah.
Yeah, Billy the Kid. Yeah, so half of the channels, I'd say there were about 500 channels on satellite TV. Half of the channels were probably porn.
Which you had no part of, I'm sure, as a young man.
Never watched that in my life.
Yep.
And then there was probably, I'd say, another quarter where TV shows that were in syndication at the time. Like, say, Star Trek The Next Generation. But, you know, since it was crazy satellite land, you could watch the episode like a week before it came on national television. So, you know, I watched that and Star Trek Deep Space Nine because I was a big Trekkie. We also got movies. The other quarter were movies that had just come out at the theater. Sometimes they would be synced up. Sometimes it would be a couple months after. So that was cool. I saw a lot of movies right after they came out. And one of those in 1989 was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I was obsessed with it. I loved it so much. I thought they were the coolest. I loved how they talked. I loved history. I mean, I have a minor in history, but I loved it even back then. So I knew who all the historical figures were. I was dying laughing the whole time. I enjoyed it so much. I agree with you. I feel like Bill and Ted's Lexicon, we just absorbed it, and we talk like them to this day. You know, I'm about to hit 40, and I still sound like Bill and Ted.
Yeah, even when we're texting each other, like, yeah, dude, awesome. It's just like, all right. Well, to get into the plot points of the film, just real quick, just some things that stand out that were fun. I love just the intro with George Carlin. I had forgotten about this, actually watching it again. You know, it's probably been a number of years. So how it opens up and he's talking to the camera and he's introducing Bill and Ted and, you know, the scenario and everything. I thought that was really fun. I just totally didn't remember that part of the movie. And then it goes to them making the video in their garage. And it's so good where they're trying to obviously start a band, but they don't know how to play their instruments. The dialogue in this is just so key. And we're going to get into top five quotes from the Bill and Ted movies at the end of the show. So definitely stick around for that, where we're going to rank the top five quotes that we love from these films. But just right away where Bill says, "We're late." And Keanu says, "For what?" "School, dude." "Oh yeah." Just, and I know that this role haunted Keanu for a long time. He said, you know, at one point he was afraid that he was gonna die, and on his gravestone it would say, "Here lies Keanu, he played Ted." and that would just be all that he made out of his life. You know, I think we have the benefit of history now with him, where we've seen him play John Wick and we've seen him in Speed and all these action films and stuff.
He managed to just keep picking great projects about every 3 to 4 years. That's just kept his career so vibrant.
Right.
It's pretty nuts if you think about it. He went from this to Speed to The Matrix. He kind of had a lull in the 2000s, then he hit John Wick, and I feel like he's as big as he's ever been now in his 50s. It's nuts.
For sure, man. He just keeps on going. You know, all that to say, his filmography shows us, watching this film, I was very impressed with him. It wasn't just like, oh, this is like a dumb guy playing a dumb guy. It was like, oh, he's acting here. You know, he's putting on this persona and he's doing a perfect job of it. Just that naivete, the innocence and the goofiness that comes across. And even though Bill and Ted are very similar characters, you wouldn't be far off to say that Keanu's Ted is the more dumb one, because he is just a lot more aloof. Bill has to explain a lot more things to him. Ted is just kind of like this goofy puppy dog. He's never really perturbed other than in a superficial way, but it's just so great. His, "Oh yeah," just completely aloof. But then my next question would be, it's time to go to school. It's got to be, what, like 6 in the morning or something. So if they're waking up at 6 in the morning to make music videos, how are they still this bad at guitar?
I think that they follow the routine of just doing that every day, where they just strum wildly for about 30 seconds and try to make a video and then get discouraged and then say they need Eddie Van Halen on guitar.
Yeah. They don't actually practice. They just go in there and shred on the guitar. Think that's going to get them somewhere.
You said something key there too, and I noticed this through all the movies. The kind of innocence and just good nature of these movies is almost shocking.
Yeah.
There's not really any ill will in these movies at all. Really, outside of the second movie, there's not even a villain. It's kind of crazy.
I guess for little kids, there might be scary moments or something, like where they go to hell and meet the devil and you know, some different themes and stuff that might especially go over younger people's heads. But I'd forgotten they were PG, and just, yeah, instead of cursing, of course, their lexicon is totally different. So they have, you know, instead of using curse words or something, they're, "Oh, bogus," you know, or "most excellent" and stuff like that. So that was kind of right off the bat a moment that stuck out to me, that killer intro. So what about you? What were some stuff that stays with you now that you're thinking about?
I think watching it this time, there is some more adult humor in the movie that went over my head before. All the stuff with Missy. So,
oh, yes. Okay, that's exactly what I want to talk about. So, good.
Bill's stepmom, Missy, is only 4 years older than Bill and Ted. I think that Ted asked her to prom, right, when he was a freshman and she was a senior.
Yeah. There's a great exchange where Bill keeps telling Ted to shut up, Ted. Spoiler alert, this is going to be one of my favorite quotes, but Bill's dad has married her and he's getting used to calling Missy his mom, you know, she's his stepmom, but they keep looking down her shirt and Bill or Ted's like, that's your mom, dude. And I love the scene where they're in the room with mom and dad and they're explaining their problem of flunking history to Bill's dad. And Bill's dad is just checking out Missy, the young hot mom, too. And he's like, good, good. When he's looking at her and he's pretending to listen to them. He's just saying good. But then he shuts the door on them. He's like, hey, y'all go take a dinner break. It gives them some money so they'll leave. And then Ted's like, now your dad's going for it in your own room. Bill's like, shut up, Ted. Your stepmom is cute, though. Shut up, Ted. Remember when I asked her to the prom? Shut up, Ted.
The best part is
so good.
For some reason, it's still innocent. It's their reaction to it. Is they're like children in how innocent they are, even though they're teenagers. Oh, I gotta say this. So whenever they cast these two actors in these roles, of course, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves, before they casted them, Bill and Ted were going to be nerds. And I think bullies were going to pick on them. But when they casted these two guys, they just thought, they're so cool. We can't make them nerds. No one will believe it.
Right, right. And the innocence, too, that you were talking about goes into my favorite part about that scene where right after Bill is yelling, shut up, Ted, at Ted, Ted just gives him this big, goofy smile. Like, he doesn't react, like, defensively or anything. Keanu just, he just gives him this huge smile like he's a puppy dog. Like, he's completely unaware of any conflict.
These guys love each other unconditionally. Like, I don't think they ever get angry with each other over the course of the movies, right?
Those little superficial moments like that where it's just, shut up, Ted. That's, like, at the most they get mad at each other. And then they're going to the Circle K. We get this in the first two films, and I'll lament later how the third one excludes any scenes from the Circle K.
Oh, but you're not quite correct.
Oh.
The Circle K does make an appearance in the final sequence. It's there.
Maybe I'm
in the background.
Okay.
Of the interstate.
All right. I didn't catch that. All right. Cool.
I got so pumped.
Cool. Well, yeah, that makes me happier now. The Circle K just feels so appropriate and so nostalgic, especially as a 80s, 90s kid, where I feel like that captures something of the American experience of a teenager where you just go to the gas station and hang out. Like, I have no idea why we did that necessarily. I mean, because there were snacks there and then you just kind of sit in the parking lot.
They had Mountain Dew.
They have beef jerky and sunflower seeds.
Microwavable burritos.
That's right. But the fact that we get those scenes at the Circle K and they're just hanging out, and then how they tie that into their quest for knowledge of history, and Ted just stops the Circle K worker and he says, excuse me, when did the Mongols rule China? It's so good. It's hilarious. I forgot how funny these movies were, honestly. Like, I knew there was wacky hijinks. The time traveling stuff was fun, but just how killer the dialogue is was really refreshing and surprising for me.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like I'm mentioning all the early scenes, and that's probably because I found in most of these films, the early scenes were my most favorite, especially in the first one. But we do have the great mall scene is classic from the first one after they've kidnapped all the historical figures and they just tell them to kind of hang out in this mall and things don't go great. They get a little wild and, you know, like Abraham Lincoln is in the classic photo booth and they're trying to take back his beard and hat because they think it's fake. He's like, no, this is my beard and hat. And it's just, you know, they start running from the cops and everything. So, you know, that's a huge scene that it's just, you know, super memorable and really fun with all these characters going wild in the mall. I don't want to skip over any of like the middle part of the film. I was surprised too that just wasn't my favorite part of the film, that I felt like it drug a little bit in the middle where they're going back in time to various places. How did you feel about those scenes where they time travel back in time?
I enjoyed them. I agree with you. They're not quite as interesting as the earlier portions and the later portions of the film, but they're enjoyable.
Yeah.
And the scene that stayed with me the longest is the scene where they go to the future and they meet future people who have been influenced by them. I believe Bruce Springsteen, E Street Band member Clarence Clemens is one of three futuristic people sitting on these high thrones with cool shades on. And for some reason, that scene left such an impression on me. It just seemed like such a cool future.
And then they give their classic line too, right? Where they ask them to say something to the crowd there in the future. And they give the classic iconic lines that still hold true today and is kind of a mantra, if you will, for our time. Be excellent to each other and party on, dudes. The crowd kind of laugh, but also like are wowed and appreciate it. And like, this is a nugget of wisdom they've just dropped on them. But if you think about it, that's such a great little line, a little mantra, a saying, and something to live by. It's almost gospel-like, where it's just be excellent to each other, you know, do good to others. Yeah, there's a little heart of gold in this film, Nick.
That's the thing with these movies. That's a future that I was hopeful for. Everyone's just chilling. Robbie Robb's End Time is playing. Everything is happy. We've found peace. And instead, we're in 2020 now, and it's essentially a hellscape that no one could have ever predicted.
Right.
But, you know, this future is still a decent ways away. Maybe if we can survive the next decade, when I say we, I mean humanity in general,
right,
maybe we can eventually make it to this blissful future. I hope we can.
That's an interesting point, too, to bring up the present in 2020, especially with the third film coming out. All these films, just us revisiting these at this time. Like we said, there's an innocence, there's a lightheartedness, and I think there's an overall positivity and just fun-loving aspect of these films that we desperately need right now. So I'm really happy for Bill and Ted. I'm glad we have these. I'm glad we have the third one. Of course, we'll get into a deeper review there, but yeah, this is necessary stuff. You might scoff at Bill and Ted. I know my wife's not super familiar with these films. I don't know if she's ever seen them, but you know, she just kind of said, I don't know if I ever really got that, and they just look kind of dumb or whatever, like a waste of your brain or whatever. But I would scoff right back and say, no, this is necessary cinema right here, my friend.
These are movies you have to buy into. You have to buy into the world of Bill and Ted to enjoy these movies.
You have to buy into it. So if you don't, if this is not your thing, then I can understand how this could not reach a lot of people, how this would come across as just kind of dumb and stupid and uninteresting to some people. But say what it might about those who get it, obviously there are a lot of fans out there. I discovered the official Bill and Ted website, which looks like it's from 1989, but
yes,
I think it's billandted.org or something like that. It looks like it's straight out of GeoCities, like build your own website from 1994.
Oh, I had one of those. I wonder if it's still around.
I doubt it. I think they killed all that off. But
oh man,
it's got like a fan form, I think, that's been taken down. But it's got so much collected information about this franchise. I didn't know that there was a spinoff TV show, animated series. There's collectibles. There's
oh, dude, you didn't know about the cartoon?
No.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm going to do the I'm the old man of the show thing on now. So
you damn youngin'.
You damn millennial.
You didn't know about Bill and Ted animated series.
Okay, so yeah, the cartoon was pretty cool. They actually got Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter to do the voices. I enjoyed it. I was about 10 when it came on, and I thought it was pretty good.
Sweet. I didn't realize they did their voices, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of recaptured the feeling of the movie, and it had a great theme song, too. You know, I can still remember it. It's a party, that's for sure. Like, I remember all the lyrics, actually, but I'm only going to subject you to that part.
Nice.
But yeah, it was pretty good, man. There's a lot of material with these movies, you know, little side things that are cool.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was just getting at, is that there's a lot of material that came out of these films. There's just so much there. Apparently, there was a musical that was produced, like, on a low budget, low-key. It wasn't, you know, very widespread. But did you read about this? There was a Bill and Ted musical that some people wrote and performed. That's amazing. That's amazing that we live in a world where there's a Bill and Ted musical. I'm going to see this.
I really think the innocence and the optimism of these movies strikes a chord with people.
For sure.
Because, like you said before, even Keanu in interviews for this movie, when they asked him if it's good, he was like, I mean, it's good for a Bill and Ted movie. They understand these movies are objectively ridiculous, but in their own world, again, if you can buy into it, they're very enjoyable, innocent, uplifting movies. I can't wait to talk about the third one,
right?
But we've got to finish this one and talk about the next one.
Yeah,
so
we got to wrap this one up. So there's a few more scenes that just stuck out to me. Socrates calling Sigmund Freud a geek when he blows it with the mall girls. He just says, geek! That's so good. And then when the cops are chasing after Genghis Khan, Of course, he's on the skateboard. He jumps off and flips over them on a from a trampoline back onto the skateboard. And then Billy the Kid fires his gun in the air as they run away from the mall cops. It's just so good. So kinetic. So fun.
So good. Oh, man. And I had a huge crush on Joan of Arc from this when I was a kid.
Yeah, that was the singer from the Go-Go's, I think. I was watching something about all the musicians that they tried to include in all the films.
Yeah, you're right. It is her. And I had a crush on the singer from the Go-Go's. So there you go.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, she looked really cool. Did any of the time travel stuff make sense to you at first? I was like, wait, how are they doing this? They just basically say like whatever they want is going to happen later so they can like plant the dad's keys behind the bush and all the stuff in the police station. I mean, that was really, really goofy and fun.
That blew my mind when I was a kid. So they keep right. running into these problems and then they say, well, we'll just go back in time and do this. And then it automatically happens. They settle these little traps for,
right.
for Keanu's dad who's chasing them around. I thought that was so brilliant and I still enjoyed it a yeah. lot this time.
But then my thinking was like, wait, how are they going to get through this so they can do that later if they don't have the keys now? You know what I mean? Like, how do they, like, it's like a paradox in itself.
So they're Bill and Ted, dude.
Right. So I was like, okay, I'm going to stop trying to understand this. Because, yeah, I'm sure when I was a kid, this just blew my mind as well. What about Freud psychoanalyzing Ted at the end on the stage where he's explaining to him why his dad's so mad at him and takes out his pent-up aggression on him? And then he says, Bill? And Bill's like, nah, just have a minor Oedipal complex.
Of course, that's a joke I didn't get whenever I was 10, right, but man. Right.
That was the kind of stuff that great. I did not get back in the day, but it was hilarious now. Yeah, all the stuff with Missy, and I love how that they continue that joke with Missy throughout all the films.
I think she's the only character, along with Bill and Ted, and Ted's dad, who's in all three movies.
Right. His dad's in all three as well. So good, man. Lincoln's speech at the end, so goofy and ridiculous and over the top, where he's given this 87 minutes ago speech.
87 minutes into the movie, too. How brilliant is that?
So good. And then I love the ending of that speech where he says, be excellent to each other and party on, dudes. So ridiculous.
That's the best. That is the best. The best thing that's ever been in a movie.
Oh, man.
It's so good.
So many classic lines, but we have to move on. But like I said, I think it was just more fun to have historical people in the present day setting, you know, especially the mall scene like we talked about. I was a little disappointed in the princesses. They were definitely just like some one-dimensional arm candy. That was a little bit more obvious now as an adult, where I was like hoping they'd have a little bit more active roles throughout the film, but at least they got to be a part of the band in the end, I guess, you know.
Yes, yeah. That probably did give me a distorted view on what I should expect from a mate, though they yes. are the only ones who were initially competent musicians, so they do kind of carry the whole band.
They do.
Once they come along.
This is true. Cool. Well, let's move on to Bogus Journey, or aka Bill and Ted Go to Hell.
That's right. So that was the initial title of this film, right?
I remember hearing
that even back in the day, it was being referred by that title for a while. And then it wasn't. It was Bogus Journey.
Yeah, the studio backed out, I guess. They wussed out and said, oh, no, we can't print hell in the paper, when they had paper newspapers.
They're still around.
No, we have stacks of them at the library, dude. Come on.
Yes.
Yeah, but nobody reads them, so they might as well not exist. Anyway, Bill and Ted Go to Hell turned into Bogus Journey, and it is quite the journey, but I would not describe it as bogus. I would also call it most excellent. It is one of the greatest sequels ever made. I'll just lay that down right here.
Do you really feel that way?
I do. I really love it. I'm going to just go out and say, I think I like Bogus Journey better than Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, that's incredible. Now we have a chance to argue this episode.
There you go. Because
I disagree. I enjoy aspects of it, but it is my least favorite of the three.
Ooh.
And that was also my son's opinion this time.
Ooh, least favorite of the three. Wow. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I still enjoyed it to an extent, but it is my least favorite between the three of them.
Interesting.
But I have a sad history with this movie. I loved Excellent Adventure. I was super, super psyched that they were going to make a sequel. Like I told you, I love the cartoon too. I was all up in the Bill and Ted world. So the second movie comes out and the villain of Film Shake, my cousin Joe. I'm just kidding. I love Joe.
He's our villain.
I like how he figures in negatively to so many episodes. And he won't remember any of this stuff probably. But Joe had a pool and he lived next door to me. So I would go swimming with Joe and we'd talk about movies. And there was a time where Joe would let me watch movies with he and his two older brothers. Joe was my age. Or, you know, go to the movies with them sometimes. But there's a little problem. My mom was a lot more strict than his mom was with movies. And, you know, I was only like 10, so I didn't need to be watching rated R movies most likely. Even before that, you know, I watched Rambo at their house one time and I got so pumped. I went and told my mom, I watched Rambo and it was awesome. But, you know, I was like 8 and she wasn't too happy right. about that. So
wait a minute.
I think Joe got in trouble.
Yeah.
And he was miffed at me from that point on. So anytime he was going to go see a cool movie and I begged to go, he wouldn't let me because he knew I was going to tell my mom.
Right.
No matter what. No matter what it was, I was going to tell her.
He got burned on Rambo, so.
That's right.
He cut you out of Bogus Journey?
He cut me out of Bogus Journey, and then here's the thing. He came back from it, and I was like, oh man, will you go again? Maybe you, me, and your mom can go. You know, it's only a PG movie, so it's not like I'm banned from watching it.
Right.
But, you know, we lived out in the sticks, so getting out to the movies was hard. He said, no, that's not going to happen. He didn't really enjoy it too much.
Bummer.
His two older brothers were, I love both of them too, they're both my cousins, but you know, they were too cool for school at that point. They're both in high school and not feeling it, and he had to look cool too, so he was like, nah, I don't want to watch it again. It's not what you think it is, and I didn't get to go see it.
Were they like, it's not as good as the original, Nick. It's not worth your time.
No, I think the big tongue-hanging-out climax was not very cool to them.
Tongue-hanging-out
It's a
out
very,
climax.
Very earnest... I'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to that. All right. But I don't think they were into it.
Okay.
All that to say, it also didn't come to my giant satellite dish for some reason, so I missed it there.
Bogus.
And then for whatever reason, I just never saw it then. I think I was so crushed that I didn't get in early that I just never watched it.
I'm going to get in early. I'm not going to get in at all, guys.
Yeah, so I watched it now. I mean, I enjoyed it. And I'll set the plot up for this one up very fast.
Okay.
So we move ahead, and Bill and Ted are still around. Their lives are pretty similar. They're still living in San Dimas, California, which we did mention before. They live in San Dimas.
San Dimas High School Football Rules.
Which is also an Atari song. Yeah, so they're still in San Dimas, and things are looking good for them. But it turns out, really the only true villain of this franchise, a guy whose name I'm not going to even try to pronounce, I can't say it.
Dinomalos?
Yeah, there you go. It's one of the screenwriter's names.
Ed Solomon backwards.
He's from the future, and he doesn't like what Bill and Ted have made of the future, so he wants Bill and Ted dead in the past, so that they can't change the future.
That's right.
So he sends back android Bill and Teds, who are like Bill and Ted, but evil and want to run over cats.
Oh,
and
yes.
They kill Bill and Ted.
That's right. And send them to hell.
That's right. They send them to hell, where they meet Death, the star of this trilogy, in my opinion.
Really, yes. William Sadler as Death.
Incredible.
He's great.
We'll get into that a little more later on just how great he is in this role. But eventually, they get out of hell with Death. They go to heaven. They have a lot of really weird, funky adventures.
Yes.
They finally get back to the present, where they take on their evil selves. They win. There's a gigantic, ridiculous concert party, which I can't wait to talk about. Which
so
really,
good.
It just depends on how much Bill and Ted you can take on whether you can get past the end of this movie. But that's what happens.
I don't think there's any question that the ending is brilliant and glorious. And the better ending out of all three. Come on. And if you've heard our previous episode, Congo, you're going to bring it back to Congo here. You just mentioned two words I think previous listeners would understand I'm hip to jive with, which would be weird and funky adventure. So that might be why this one stands out for me, because it is quite the strange journey, my friend. There's a real villain. There's real stakes and a real conflict in this one. And I think that pushes this one over the edge for me, too, where I said in the previous one, it drug a little bit in the middle. I think that was due to some lack of conflict where they're just going back in time finding these historical figures and bringing them back to the present. Yeah, there's the time crunch to get to the school where they can give their presentation and everything. But here, you've got evil Bill and Ted robots that kill them and send them to hell. I mean, what other greater chasm do they have to overcome? That's pretty outrageous and fun. They just kind of take this wacky conceit from the original one and I feel like just move it in a totally different direction, which is really fun. And they just go bananas with it, and it's great. I loved it.
Bananas is a good word, man. I fell in love with the character of Death, or the Grim Reaper, they call him both, from the commercials to the movie and from the trailer, which I saw while watching other movies in 1991.
The Duke of Spook.
The Duke of Spook. William Sadler, you might know from Shawshank Redemption or Die Hard 2, or there's another movie where he goes to Mars with that dude from Boston Common and he gets farted on a lot. He's just awesome. He's so good in this. This is, of course, a spin on the Ingmar Bergman film, right. The Seventh Seal. You have to try to compete with Death in order to escape Death, which is impossible, and which Death tells us in this movie, no one's ever beaten him. So it turns out what he means is you've got to beat him in modern board games,
right.
Which Bill and Ted do over and over and over again. The thing is, Death cheats at board games. He still loses. First it's, okay, 2 out of 3, then it's right. 3 out of 5.
You sank my battleship. So good.
He's so good, man. But the awesome thing is, it's not just like some caricature. You can't just easily pin his character down. It's like a shockingly nuanced character.
They take him with them to heaven, and he's dressed up like Little Bo Peep or something. And then he becomes their bass player in the end. Yeah, it does not go where you expect it. You would think they would just leave him. He'd be like this bit character that they leave behind. But yeah, he continues the journey with them, and that's really good. It's really fun. But also really fun are Evil Bill and Ted, who I had a whole lot of fun watching Keanu and Alex play these other versions of themselves. I feel like they got to really stretch out their legs. That, you know, they're still playing the dude, you know, brah, like most bogus, you know, they still have all the lingo and everything, but they're getting to do some more wild and crude things. Like one of my favorite lines is where they're flying down in the time traveling phone booth and they're both in there and there's a cat in the Circle K parking lot and one of them says, aim for the cat, dude, aim for the cat. And the other one's like, I'm trying, Evil Ted. It's so good.
And it just kind of becomes a through line where every time they see a cat, they're trying to kill it.
Right.
Which is kind of the tip off, like, this is Evil Bill and Ted, just in case you're confused.
I don't know why, but that line has always stuck with me. I will randomly think of that line in the middle of my boring library job or something. Just go, aim for the cat, dude, aim for the cat. I did not, however, remember. And we didn't touch on this on the previous film, but the unfortunate use of the word fag. Again, it's 2020. We're looking at this through different lenses than we ever did growing up. And I'm sure we, much to our horror now, we use that word inappropriately growing up as well. But that rubbed me a little bit the wrong way now.
It was pretty shocking. It's twice in the movie, I think.
Yeah.
It's in reference to Satan.
Mm. Yeah.
It was a different time. It was an acceptable word then. It's most definitely not, for good reason, an acceptable word now. But that is there.
Yeah.
That's really the only thing that harshes the vibe in these three movies at all.
Right. But like you said, back then, I don't think that would have harshed the vibe. But yeah, it sticks out now. It's like, maybe dub that over. Maybe not.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember the line where Evil Bill and Ted are about to leave Real Bill and Ted's apartment and they see a picture of the princesses, or the princess babes as they're referred to, and Evil Ted says, I've got a full-on robot chubby, dude. It's like, what kind of language is this, man? What other movie could you find that dialogue in? That's insane.
No other movie. Speaking of no other movie, so the last 20 minutes of this one are insane. And really, for me, this is what puts it down a level and probably what puts it up a level for you. You're kind of into this sort of thing, buddy.
Yeah.
It's just total insanity.
Yes.
They come back to the future, not only with death, but with this strange alien being called Station, who they're given by God when they request the universe's greatest scientist. Apparently, it's this weird Martian creature who is two creatures and can become one creature.
Right. Two creatures that become one giant Station. Yeah, I could see how this would lose a lot of people right here. It almost lost me, to be honest. I was like, whoa, this is a little too much. Yeah, just looking at it and appreciating it for what it is, it's really wacky and fun.
My son and I definitely looked at each other, and my wife was asleep by this part, and just both said, what is going on? Like, what happened all of a sudden to this movie? Because it's like a Battle of the Band scenario, right? Mm-hmm. They show up and their new robot selves, which have been made by Station, which look insane.
Right.
It's insane Bill and Ted looking robots.
Right. They're made out of random hardware store parts and garbage that Station puts together in the back of their van. And then they bust through the brick wall like that's behind the backstage of the Battle of the Bands, which I'm pretty sure that brick wall was only there for that reason, for them to crash through. But I like how the very anatomical, high-functioning evil robots from the future don't even try to fight these garbage robots, but they get decapitated via uppercut by these machines that were just made in the back of a van.
The most uppercut of uppercuts.
Come on. This movie is gold. This is so good.
And then from that point, everyone in the audience, by the way, because there's a huge crowd watching this Battle of the Bands or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They're all okay with anything that happens. They're like rapturous with anything that happens on stage.
Oh, this is just part of the act, right? They're following Primus. I mean, so they already got a taste of that. So.
The Primus and Faith No More, all the musical stuff in these movies is always great. So I enjoyed that. It gets so crazy.
You've got Pam Grier, who is, I guess, recruiter or the showrunner for the Battle of the Bands. And the evil robots are about to get on stage. Pam Grier asks them, where are the girls? And they say, oh, no, we're going to kill the girls at the finale. And I'm like, why is she just like, okay, that's cool. Like, she says nothing. But then we find out later it was Rufus all along. He was dressed in a Pam Grier suit. He would know these are the evil robots, right? He would know this isn't the real Bill and Ted. Why wouldn't he cut the girls down so they weren't dangling from ropes that were disintegrating from the rafters? How does that make any sense?
Why indeed?
He needed to preserve the dramatic flow of the film, I guess, you know? So Bill and Ted could be the ones that lowered them down and keep them together. I'm sure it was a part of his master plan.
But I guess if you're totally 100% cool with what these movies are laying down, maybe this finale won't bother you, but it's nuts. Eventually we get Bill and Ted. Oh, the best part of the movie. Yeah, the bad guy shows up.
He gets Melvined, which that was a new term for me back then and now. We always referred to it as a wedgie when you grab somebody's underwear and pull it up so high that it...
Urkel used to mention getting Melvined. It was really only in the early 90s, and that was it.
Okay, it's an early 90s lingo that I forgot about. But yeah, they Melvined Death earlier in the film to get away from him. So Death is the one that gets to Melvin Denomalos in the end here. And then he has like a goofy, pleased look on his face, which was just really weird and strange and kind of off-putting. I don't know. It was just kind of strange. Yeah, man. This finale, after they dispatch the bad guy, and again, they pull some time travel hijinks where they go in the future to set up different props to take him out, like the sandbag that falls on him and the fake gun and everything. All that was really goofy and fun. And then the cage falls down. Then he's like, oh, but I can do this too because I have a key. And they're like, but only the guys who win in the end would be able to set stuff up. So we really set up the key and the gun because it's fake.
This all happens over the span of like 30 seconds of the movie, too. That's the best part.
Oh, yeah. It's the best. But I still have to say one thing that the finale here does for me is it introduces me to a Kiss song that I forgot existed as well, which is God Gave Rock and Roll to You. And I still have this song stuck in my head now, 4 or 5 days later. It's awesome. It's the perfect anthem for the ending here. It's really catchy and terrible.
Sorry to all the KISS fans. Jordan Courtney is not a fan of the band that you like.
Sorry, KISS people. But the chorus of the song is really great. I mean, I actually enjoyed the whole song. It's really goofy. And there one part, I think Gene Simmons is like, because it's kind of like a gospel song or a ripoff of a gospel song in a way. So at the end of the song, he's like, oh, yeah, let me tell you about it. Life can get hard. Life can be rough, but you gotta push on through. And then they break back into the chorus. God gave rock and roll to you. And it's just so catchy. It's so good.
Yes. And we have Bill and Ted, who went 18 months into the future, had children, grew gnarly facial hair.
Oh, yeah.
And now they can rock. They can rock for real. So it's the two of them, and their babies are attached to their backs. Their wives are playing music. They've got Death on bass. They've got Station.
And the bongos, yeah.
Which is really a smart move.
That's how they get those epic, epic bongo riffs.
I say tongue hanging out because it's like the visual and oral equivalent of your dog sticking its head out the window while you're driving and sticking its tongue out and just slobber flying back everywhere. It's ridiculous. It didn't ruin the movie for me, but it was so ridiculous. I figured you would love that, Nick? Part. I had a feeling.
These movies are ridiculous, so if you're going to be ridiculous, you should go all out and have a KISS song going while you got Martian creatures playing the bongos and Death on the bass. And then Death has his little rap where he's like, you might be a street sweeper, but you sooner or later
you totally bungled that. But spoiler alert, it's on my top five, and I've got it written down. And terrible. I'm just going to read it. So we'll get it right later in the episode.
All right. So you get it right later. Yeah. I mean, that was pretty good for off the top of my head. Come on. I like how he swings the scythe, though, and then he ducks so it won't hit him. And he's like, what does he say?
Get down with your bad self, is what he says. Which is like brilliant physical comedy from William Sadler. And also, there's a cool part in the credits where the credits start rolling, our favorite 90s thing, where they start rolling over the movie still playing. We get all these awesome newspaper headlines about what happened after the movie. Like, for instance, Death leaves Wild Stallions and goes solo, but then completely fails and then rejoins. There's just all kinds of cool little newspaper clippings. So that kind of redeemed the scene for me a little bit, too. I mean, again, I didn't hate it. It was just like, oh, this is stretching it for me. A little too goofy. Like, it kind of, they broke the bounds there. Just a little bit of goofiness.
Speaking of the headlines at the end, I had a couple of questions from this film I wanted to work out with you. At one point, Evil Bill says to his stepmom, catch you later, future wife. Does that mean she divorces Ted's dad and then marries her son? But then in a headline, we see that Missy, the stepmom character, apparently marries Denomalos, which could lead us into the beginning of the next film. But before we go there, we need to step back and you need to explain something to me, Nick. So like we said, they go to hell. They're falling into hell. There's this long scene where they're just in black. They're falling down. They're yelling. It's awesome. Back in the day when you used to watch it on TV, they'd cut in the middle of them screaming, for like 20 seconds, and then it would cut to commercial, and you'd come back to the movie, and they'd still be screaming, which just heightens the jokes. It's great. But then they stop screaming, they're still falling, and then they decide to play 20 questions. This is, I think, the only joke for me that doesn't land, that I don't really quite understand what they're going for here. Maybe the joke is that they get through the 20 questions so fast because it's supposed to be something that passes the time. But Bill says, hey, you want to play 20 questions? And Ted says, okay, got one. And then Bill says, all right, are you a mineral? Ted says, yeah. Bill says, are you a tank? Yeah, whoa, you got it. Is he guessing that he's a mineral tank? How is a tank a mineral? I guess unless he's saying, are you a mineral tank? Does that make any sense to you?
Listeners, if you understand this joke from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, please email us at filmshakepodcast@gmail.com or send us a message on Twitter.
So I'm guessing it doesn't ring with you either.
Them falling forever was funny enough to where I just let that pass.
Okay. So it's just kind of one of those, I don't know about that. I mean, I scoured the internet, my friend. I was looking for explanations of this. I'm not getting it. Somebody out there knows what this means or has some interpretation. So far, I have not seen an adequate explanation other than, oh, they get through 20 questions. Like, they know each other so well that they can't really pass the time because he guesses it right away. But still, mineral tank, I don't understand. Unless it's like, oh, they're in California. They have mineral tanks out there. I don't know.
Someone explain it's
just,
it to us.
Just weird. And a tank is not a mineral. Yeah, please explain it. I'm hurting my brain here. Okay. Speaking of Missy and Anomalos marrying and the headlines we get there, we also get some other headlines like they go on to tour the Middle East and they bring peace to the Middle East and some really outrageous stuff. So yeah, let's get into the third film and see if any of those things track or if they hold any water anymore.
Yes, that's right. It's time to talk about Bill and Ted Face the Music. It took us 29 years to get this movie, and it came at the perfect time.
It really did. And, you know, we've heard rumors for years now that this was coming or they were trying to get this made, and it looked like it might not ever happen, but it did. And yes, the perfect time that it could. I don't know about for the perfect time for any, like, the box office revenues. I'm hoping it does well VOD, but could have come in a better time where theaters were actually open, you know, nationwide, where people would go out and pay lots of money to see this and make lots of money for the crew. It's a good time to have this kind of lighthearted fun in your life while you're going through one of possible the worst years that we've had in a long time. So
yeah, probably the worst year in modern history.
Yeah, for sure.
The movie begins with something I loved. And really, there was something that I was kind of hoping for with this, which is that Bill and Ted are failures. They never wrote that song. And look, here's something I meant to talk about with the first movie, but it actually works to talk about it now. Even as a kid, when I was watching the first movie, I know that when they explained that Bill and Ted were going to write this amazing song, that the movie couldn't show the song. Because in any work of media or art, whenever someone has done the greatest thing ever, you can't really portray that because it would then have to be the greatest thing ever. And why would it be in your movie or whatever else you're doing?
It wouldn't work for the story because it just wouldn't. That's right. Sound believable.
Exactly. So Bill and Ted have spent their entire lives, and now they're, you know, in real life, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are in their mid-50s. I don't know how old they're supposed to be, but old enough to have daughters who are in their mid-20s and who have, it say that they went to college? They still live at home. That's the important thing.
That's all we got. That's right. They listen to music all day. I've got two daughters, Billy and Thea. Billy played by Bridget Lundy Payne, and Thea played by Samara Weaving, Hugo Weaving's niece, apparently.
That's how she got this role, Keanu Reeves worked with Hugo Weaving. Yeah. He heard she was Hugo Weaving's niece. And I'm not going to say that this is nepotism at its worst, because she is brilliant. The actress playing the daughters are both brilliant in the movie, in my opinion. But hey, let's finish the plot.
They're really great. So, yeah, for sure.
They never write this song. And it turns out now the entire universe is coming apart. And they've got, 72 hours? It's not a long time. They've got to hurry up and write the song, or else everything's just going to go to hay.
I think it's like 72 minutes,
72
right?
minutes, yes, that's right. Because the movie is kind of in real time, right?
Or pretty close, it's like the length of the movie, basically.
Yes.
Like, you have until the end of this movie to make the world right.
So Bill and Ted, in a very Bill and Ted way, decide to travel through time to try to go visit their future selves, who they're hoping have written the song. So Bill and Ted go a few years in the future, then they go a few more years, they meet different variations of themselves. Eventually, they find out that the Logan and the Preston who wrote the song is actually their daughters. Yes, that's the big spoiler. That's not really a spoiler because it's very clear early on to viewers that that's the case. But Bill and Ted, like we said, they're not the brightest bulbs. They don't pick up on this till the very end of the film.
I'm not the brightest bulb, apparently, because it was a surprise to me in the end. I didn't feel like they telegraphed it so much. Other people watching it picked up on it better than I did, but I didn't think that was like too overt or a spoiler early on or anything.
I thought that it was, but that's fine. Agree to disagree. Whatever the case, rather, I think brilliantly, we find that it's not that it's the greatest song. It's a song that unites the world because the whole world plays it in unison. So we have dual plots here where, as Bill and Ted are visiting their future selves, their daughters are going around through history finding the world's greatest musicians and bringing mm-hmm. them to this time to create a super band to perform the song. And the movie climaxes with the song being played by everyone who's ever lived in existence, playing and singing along to the song at the same time,
yeah.
which unites the entire universe and saves it.
Right, man. So if you didn't like the ridiculousness of the end of the second one, I don't know how you could get into this then. For what it has going for it, I feel like Bill and Ted Face the Music is really fun in how it expands the original conceits of the previous films. It plays with references to the first two, of course. But then I feel like it's really interesting and the plot is probably a lot more complex and dynamic than the plot is in the first two. There's not a ton of plot in the first two. I feel like you get a lot more like interesting twists and turns here. So I feel like the screenplay in this one might be, as far as like the plot goes, one of my favorite out of the three. Yeah, I really like how they expand and bring in a lot of these new characters and go in different directions, but still call back to, of course, the time travel elements of the first one, the hell element of the second one. So yeah, all that was really fun. And then yeah, the big climax with the song in the end, it's pretty wild, it's pretty wacky, it's fun. Tonally, it's a lot more inspirational or heartwarming than you get in the first two.
I guess you could say that. I thought those were fairly heartwarming too, but this does take it up a level, because yeah, I have to admit, whenever they play the song at the end, even though it included the millennial whoop, I still teared up.
The millennial whoop,
yeah, you know, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Google it. It's a thing. I noticed it long before it was titled The Millennial Whoop and complained to my wife, why is all the music that people your age, because I talked to her like she's my daughter, why does it sound like this? Why do they go, whoa, 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 whoa? And then music critics started to identify it and they labeled The Millennial Whoop. It is in the song at the end, but I appreciated that obviously guitar rock is not the dominant form of music anymore like it was when the original movies were made. So of course they've incorporated more modern styles into the song, even though Bill and Ted still have their awesome part where they get to come in.
Yeah, they come in with the guitar solos and stuff. Yeah,
it's awesome.
That's good.
And I like that they got actual musicians in on the band too. The guy from Animals as Leaders is in there. There's just a lot of cool people in this movie. There's just a lot of cool stuff. I really appreciate it a lot. I even like that there's a lot of little mini stories in here. My favorite being that apparently Ted has never been comfortable with himself.
Right.
But Bill has.
That was really great. Yeah.
As he meets all of his other selves, Bill remarks on it. Why are you always so weird with yourself, dude?
Yeah.
And he's got to make peace with that, which is great. Right. And then the wives have their own story where they're being shown all these future Bill and Teds themselves to show that Bill and Ted are just never going to figure it out, which is supposed to turn them away from Bill and Ted. But we find out that the present Bill and Teds are the actual destiny that they like and are happy with.
Yeah, this does have a lot of little stuff in it throughout that was really fun. I want to go back to the opening. I think, again, some of the early scenes in all these three movies are my most favorite. They're the most excellent. I want to go back to the wedding scene at the beginning where apparently this Missy joke with Missy divorcing and marrying all these different people in their family keeps coming back, where she's apparently divorced Ted's dad after divorcing. At first she was married to Bill's dad, then she divorced Bill's dad and married Ted's dad in the second movie, and then now she's divorced Ted's dad and is marrying his younger brother Deacon, which is just so insane.
He was a little kid in the first movie.
He was just a little kid. He's the kid that watches Napoleon.
Now he's Beck Bennett from SNL.
And she calls him Freaky Deaky at one point. She's like, let's go dance, Freaky Deaky.
So good.
Like, again, mentioning the headline from the end of Bogus Journey, apparently they're just going to disregard that Missy ever married Anomalos. They don't get into that. It's just Deacon now. It's straight from Ted to Deacon. So
Ted's dad to Deacon, right? I don't think she ever got with Ted.
Oh, yeah, Ted's dad. Hold on. I mean, there was that weird moment where evil Bill said, see you later, future wife. So I don't know.
That's true. There could be an alternate timeline.
Oh, yes.
I appreciate that as innocent and goofy these movies are, I like how complex the plots actually are.
Especially in this one, the plot in this is pretty complex.
How cool is it, too, that Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon, the screenwriters, got to write all these movies, which is why the tone stays the same. And then Alex Winter, who kind of retired from acting leaving after Bogus Journey back in 91 so that he could focus on a filmmaking career. He directed a lot of music videos and directed a decent amount of films too, and he did some good stuff.
He's done a lot of documentaries,
Yeah, so he was also really instrumental in making sure this got made. I know it was important to him. He helped produce it and really helped see it through. And I think it really paid off because, man, things are rough right now. The hope that this movie provides, I personally need it. I enjoyed it a lot.
I enjoyed it too, man. I don't know if I enjoyed it as much as you do. It sounds like you might have enjoyed it a little bit more.
Yeah, because you're all up on Bogus Journey, man.
You know, when you go back to the wedding scene where Bill and Ted start to sing their song, or Ted's on theremin.
I'm never going to let you get back to this scene. I'm just going to keep going off to the side towards like an 18-hour episode, and I'm just going to filibuster you so you never get to talk about it. Yes, the movie opens with this wedding, and go ahead. I won't interrupt you again.
No, you're good. So, hey, Bill Ted, come on. We only got a few minutes left here. Yeah, I love how after the Missy stuff at the wedding, Bill and Ted sing or perform. We're not sure if this is going to unite the world, this song they were about to play, but it might. And then Ted's on theremin. Bill's doing some weird throat vocals, like looped on an effects pedal. They're just like really earnest, really into it. Everybody at the wedding, you know, their reaction shots are hilarious, how they're just kind of like, what the hell? But their younger daughters, Billy and Thea, look like they're into it. They start dancing to this weird rhythm with this theremin and this looped.
I love how much their daughters love them in this movie. Right. And admire them. It's awesome.
That was super refreshing too, just how they're almost like carbon copies of Bill and Ted. Of course, they have their own personalities to a degree, but they've adopted the lingo. That theremin playing was most luminous, Uncle Ted. So good. Yeah, and just it's refreshing to see daughter characters that are looking up to their fathers, that are trying to help them. They're being positive. You know, they're not just being angsty teenagers. So that was fun.
It's cool, too. I think the main difference between them and their dads is that they're true students of music. They're very, very knowledgeable about every instrument that they could be. Classic musicians going way, way back in the times. Right. They go back to 10,000 BC to grab a percussionist, which I thought was pretty cool. And again, their performances, they match that innocence where there's just nothing negative coming from them. There's no ill will toward anyone. I thought that that was great.
That was great. Yeah, they preserved that from the original too. And like you said, the two screenwriters that have been on this for all three films now, Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson, really cool to see them be able to create these new characters and to create the tone and keep the tone just similar and fluid throughout all three films. How common is it, do you see that, where the same two writers on a whole trilogy, usually a lot of times these characters are kind of passed back and forth between even different studios or different writers, different directors, three different directors on each film. But it is cool to see that the writing stays the same. And I feel like the directorial stamp of these three different directors is pretty invisible. You know, there's not a whole lot of flashiness going on behind the camera where it stands out.
For your favorite of the trilogy, Bogus Journey,
yeah,
I have to give it this. And again, I enjoy the film. It's just not my favorite of the three. I love this sort of Trapper Keeper visuals that this movie has, like early 90s Trapper Keeper. Apparently they did on purpose. They went with all these crazy neon colors and just lot of circles and triangles intentionally. So I think visually, I won't say it looks the best because the new one's got modern techniques that the first two don't. So I mean, and better special effects. But I think visually that one stands out the most to me.
It definitely has the set pieces and the moments that are, you know, written into the scenes that give it that push where you've got the really neon foam core future. You've got the Tim Burton-esque hellscape where they're down like in the different tunnels, like running from the evil Easter Bunny and the Colonel Coates or Oates or whatever his name was.
Oh, man. But, yeah. You just reminded me of my favorite thing about this movie.
Of the third one?
How awesome is William Sadler in the role of Death? That about halfway through here, he suddenly, surprisingly makes his first appearance, and he's a huge character in the film after that. But as soon as he appeared, my son and I just simultaneously said, yes!
That's awesome.
He's that great.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
But really, he's got to make up with Bill and Ted because apparently they had a falling out and the daughters have to repair the relationship as they all end up in hell, like you said.
Yeah.
And also, hey, you know who we didn't talk about?
What?
Caleb McCoy, the android that's sent to murder Bill and Ted.
He's so good. I think he's probably one of my favorite things about this movie. The robot that lasers the daughters and all the musicians. And he's strangely human, but just really awkward. He's like, I'm sorry. I lasered your daughters. Just his facial tics, his little facial twicks and turns. I don't know.
He just wants everyone to think he's cool, too, but he's really, really, really lame.
Yeah, he's just really annoying.
Such a great character.
Keeps telling everybody his name.
He's played by Anthony Carrigan from the series Barry, which I don't know if you've seen that, but he's so good in it. He plays this mobster named Noho Hank. He's a Chechen. Mm. He's hilarious in that. So I didn't even recognize him until I saw the credits, but
yeah.
He's so funny.
He's really funny in this. Yeah, one of the standouts for sure.
That's another thing I liked about this movie is there's just a lot of standout stuff like that.
Right. I think my favorite part of the film, you know, where they're going to visit the future versions of themselves. And we see it in the trailer, and I wasn't quite sure if it'd be funny from the trailer, but where they go to visit prison Bill and Ted, where they've been incarcerated and they're all beefed up and they've got tats all over themselves. And I didn't notice this from the trailer, but watching the movie, you could really see some of the tattoos on them. And they're really funny because they've got, Bill has SD for San Dimas on his forehead, and he's got heinous tattooed on his chest, and they just look really ridiculous. Ted has excellent tattooed on his chest. Usually you'd see these tattoos like death to authority or something, you know, really over the top and edgy, but it's like heinous, excellent. I think Ted even has love, Billy and Elizabeth forever, like inside a heart on his stomach. It's just really ridiculous. But yeah, I love the stuff with the robot, how the robot shows up and he's about to shoot real Bill and Ted. And so beefed up prison Bill and Ted are like, oh no, you know, if he kills them, what happens to us? Yeah, we die too. So then they start beating up the robot, and then all the prison gang comes and starts just beating on them. And you see like the point of view shot in the future, like the future leader people are watching from the robot's eyes as the robot's getting beat up by all these prisoners. That's so good.
Yes, because for some reason, the people from the future who have let Bill and Ted know, you got to write this song or we're all going to die, decide, you know what, it's not even worth it. Let's just kill Bill and Ted and see what happens instead.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why the robot gets sent to kill them.
Right, because there's a possible different interpretation of the prophecy that they would unite the world, is that the death of Bill and Ted might be what can unite the world and save reality. Which is funny, it's like maybe that was sent forward from Denomalos's cult or something, because they're trying to kill Bill and Ted, and that's like how they're going to preserve the world. So maybe there's a little faction left over in the future.
Maybe so. Who knows, man? There's so many theories we could have about all these movies, because now we've got a full trilogy. I'll say I'm very happy with overall.
Yeah.
I wish that I had watched Bogus Journey far earlier. One of the last movies on my long slept on list where I wanted to see it and just never did. So I'm glad to have done that, and I'm glad that they got to finish this, man. It was extremely satisfying, for me at least. I just really appreciated that they were able to keep the same tone and kind of the same message throughout these three movies. It'd still be excellent to each other. As important as ever, as we're seeing a lot of people not be excellent to each other in the slightest. Right. It's something that I think everyone needs to be reminded of on a daily basis. Very, very enjoyable for me.
And don't forget the other half of that, which is to party on.
And party on, that's right.
Got to keep the party going.
Socially distanced with your mask on.
Right, that's right.
Probably from your house on Zoom.
That's right. Just a bit of a change for our times. But yes, still need to party, even if it's just inwardly. Another favorite bit part that I love was the two demons that they meet in hell, and they're telling them to have a good time. They're like, oh, did you see those two girls? Oh, yeah, they were really nice. Okay, guys, yeah, go that way. All right, have a great time in hell. Apparently, that was the two writers, Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson. They were named Ugly Demon and Stupid Demon. So that's great. I'm glad that they got a little part in there, too. And then how Dennis McCoy, the robot, follows them into hell somehow. Again, just kind of calling back to some of the wackiness of Bogus Journey. Oh, yeah, that's a robot in hell. You don't see that every day. It's just really fun. Their dad's in hell. Everyone's in hell. So talk about a great message of the film. Everybody goes to hell.
No. But then they get out.
But then they get out with death's help. So
maybe we'll get out of 2020 eventually.
Maybe so. I did think it was a nice twist that the girls in the end were the ones that created the song. It, you know, it's like there are some touching moments in here, even though it's really funny. But to me as a dad, that's kind of cool to see a film where it's like, oh, these musicians, they're striving to fulfill their destiny and they never have. And the whole conflict is about them being frustrated by that. They were told they were going to do this great thing and they never did. And, you know, as an aspiring artist and musician and a millennial kid growing up, I feel like a lot of people can relate to that, where you have like these big dreams you want to accomplish and then things don't quite work out like you expected. Maybe you had delusions of grandeur or whatever. But then the fact that they pass this on to their girls and that they're musical savants apparently, and they're able to unite the world through song and all this, I thought that was nice. I've seen other people say, yeah, that was kind of lame or whatever, like they didn't write the song, or, you know, there weren't lyrics to the song or whatever. But I feel like, especially if the whole world is going to sing the song in unison throughout all time, because all timelines are entangled or something that Kid Cudi explains at one point.
Who's great in this, by the
yeah.
way.
At one point he says, station, like out of nowhere. They just throw that line back in. I almost thought, what if, I kind of wish he had turned into the station creature from Bogus Journey at that point.
Well, maybe he is station.
He was hiding within Kid Cudi the whole time. That would have been great. They're going to call back to station. But that would probably have been a little too wacky for 2020.
Maybe so.
Yeah, if the whole world is singing this song, then of course it's got to be the millennial whoop, right? Because you can't have lyrics because everyone speaks a different language. So you got to have something that they all can, you know, connect and resonate with. It's going to be the whoa. And then guitar solos. Who doesn't love guitar solos?
The devil.
Actually, I don't, but yeah, I'm the devil.
Come on. You like the end of Bogus Journey and you don't like guitar solos?
Actually, yeah, those guitar solos are pretty killer. I dig that Kiss song a whole lot. The music did feel very like powerful. I think I got chills at one point just throughout, like where they're going to visit the real musicians. Like you said, all the characters that play these historical musicians, they are real musicians. They meet Jimi Hendrix. All that stuff is
Louis
really
Armstrong.
Cool. Louis, yeah, especially Louis Armstrong stuff when they're playing The Saints Go Marching In. It's so good. Yeah, I got chills, man.
Yeah, it was great. Even there's a Weezer song in the end credits reminding me of Pinkerton era Weezer, which they haven't sounded that good to me in 25 years. Even that, I was like, wow, everything might be okay.
Right. Oh, man, it might all work out in the end. Like Rufus says, you know, some things don't make sense until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I did feel like the end of the movie probably was the part that made the least sense to me, just because
it makes no sense whatsoever.
It's pretty wacky. I felt like it gets really complicated but wraps up things really quickly with like the multiple timelines. They're all simultaneous and they give everyone instruments. I thought that was kind of weird. I rewatched it and it worked a little bit better for me, but watching it then, it just, the first time especially, it felt a little rushed, where, you know, like, oh, let's solve this problem. Like, how, you know, Bill and Ted ask each other, like, how is a song supposed to unite the world, dude? And they're like, oh, maybe everyone's got to play it at the same time. Like, they just come up with that off the top of their heads. And then they go and discover that the phone booth is really like a tunnel to the quantum realm and they can go into infinite different timelines or something. I don't know. It's just like a little too much there at the end. They could have reeled it back a little bit, but it is a wacky movie trying to be ridiculous.
Well, it's the climax of a trilogy that's kind of thrived on this kind of thing. So I was fine that it was like that on steroids. Because, you know, not everyone who's ever existed in history can play an instrument or sing. And
right. That was a little ridiculous, too. Like, they're handing out guitars and tambourines, and people are looking at them like, what do I do with this? But then all of a sudden, a minute later, everyone's playing in unison somehow.
The logic of the trilogy allows for it. So I was fine with it.
Don't need logic there. It's just good old fun. Oh, I did want to say, I did kind of wish there would have been another coda or something at the very end after the world-saving moment. I know we get the credit scene with old Grandpa Bill and Ted, but I kind of wanted something more with Bill and Ted and maybe their girls, just something to cap it off. Kind of like we did in the first film where they go back to the garage, something similar to that. But it just cuts to like outer space shot of the world and the girls are giving us their narration. And that was fine. But yeah, I felt like it rushed through it a little bit. Could have stayed with those characters a little bit longer. Maybe I just didn't want to let go, man. this is a legacy coming to an end, I suppose, right? Would you be up for another one? You think they'll stop here? This is kind of a done deal at this point, right?
To me, this was too solid of an ending.
Yeah.
I'd rather them not go back. I don't want a reboot. I'm glad they didn't do a reboot, which I know a lot of studios told them, no, we don't want middle-aged them. We want new actors. Let's just reboot it.
Hell no, dude.
It's the same thing with Point Break, right? When we talked about Point Break getting remade.
Yeah.
It's the actors that made it in Catherine Bigelow's direction. Without those things, it doesn't work.
Totally.
And I don't think that this would work with other actors.
No. Them being middle-aged works so well, too. Like, the themes of the movie, of them being failures, and them trying to get their lives back together, their wives are leaving them. Like, all that conflict was really great. I thought the script was really smart with that stuff. It really fit their age appropriately. And then it was just a lot of fun. It allowed for them to go off in these different directions and be really wacky still. And yeah, some of the dialogue, it wasn't as sharp for me as the first two, but I did feel like there was more physical comedy here that rang true and that was funnier in that way. Like, looking through some of the quotes of all three of these films, I'm going to go ahead and spoil it now. I don't have any quotes from Face the Music on my top five.
I've got one.
You've got one? Okay, cool. Cool. I'm glad you've got one on there. There were some funny lines and some funny moments, but overall, I felt like the physical comedy here was what really made me laugh. Like, some of the reaction shots, some of those robot faces and stuff. That was really good. But yeah, looking through the dialogue, not quite as sharp as I'd wanted it to be in some parts, fell flat for me in a few of the different line readings, but overall, solid, really enjoyed the film.
So what's your ranking for the three movies?
I gave this one a 3.75 out of 5. I gave both of the first two, I gave it 4 out of 5. But like I said, if I had to rank them in order, I'd go Bogus Journey, Excellent Adventure, and Face the Music.
Gotcha. So for me, I'd say Excellent Adventure, Face the Music, and then Bogus Journey.
Bogus Journey. All right.
So I would give, I go on an out of 10 scale, just to be contrarian to Jordan.
Right.
I give Excellent Adventure an 8. I give Bogus Journey a 6. This one, at first I wanted to give a 7 to, but I went back and watched it again. And nice. It just, the second time resonated more. I'm going to give it an 8 too.
Cool.
I will say, and I think my son and I actually have the same ranking, which is awesome.
That's cool.
He's really tough on movies. He's like a really, really tough critic. And he was cool with all three of these. He enjoyed them. He usually doesn't even want to watch a movie. I usually have to force him to, but he was pumped after we watched the first two to watch this one. He put Animal Crossing down for 2 hours to watch it. So I'm going to rank this one second. I'd say Excellent Adventure, 8 out of 10. Bogus Journey, 6 out of 10. And Face of Music, 8 out of 10.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, I'm surprised that this one beat out Bogus Journey for you, but I'll allow it. You know, it's your opinion. You're right to be wrong.
Well, our watching was a little different too, right? Because you saw Bogus Journey a long time ago.
True.
And I didn't. So I watched all three over the course of like 3 or 4 days. I hadn't seen Excellent Adventure in probably 26, 27 years.
Right.
I'd never seen Bogus Journey. So they were all very fresh. That's just how I felt.
Cool, man. Obviously some nostalgia probably playing into Bogus Journey for me. So that might have bumped it up, but, you know, you could argue, why not Excellent Adventure? They're near neck and neck for me. I think I just like the wackiness of Bogus Journey a little bit more. It just suits me a little bit more. So good stuff all around. Really fun. So you would say your favorite out of all the films would be Excellent Adventure then?
That's right. I like that one the best. I have 3 quotes from that, one from Face of Music and one from Bogus Journey. Are you ready to do our top 5 favorite quotes?
Yeah, let's get into it. Top 5 Bill and Ted quotes. Here we go. I mentioned this earlier, but number 5 is Evil Bill and Ted in the phone booth landing in the Circle K parking lot. Aim for the cat, dude. Aim for the cat. Classic.
It was so out of nowhere and so great.
It's just a little touch, too. Like, it has nothing to do with the plot, other than to establish they apparently hate cats and want to kill cats.
And want to kill them.
Right. But, you know, like you said, it's a good thumbprint for knowing who's Evil Bill and Ted and who's regular Bill and Ted.
So my number 5 comes from Excellent Adventure, and we already mentioned it, which, Ted, now your dad's going for it in your own room. Bill, shut up, Ted.
Awesome. Yeah, that was
so
my,
good.
That's my number 3, so I'll leave that to you there. Yeah, that I had that higher, even higher up on my list. The whole exchange, the the three shut ups and the big goofy smile from Keanu. It's awesome. It works and it's really funny.
Right on. Well, what's your number four?
Number four, this might come as a surprise. This is a little less known of a line, but this is when Bill and Ted have escaped hell and they're waking up in the desert, and Bill, played by Alex Winter, he's got a worm crawling in his ear, and he pulls the worm out of his ear and he goes, "Dinner's over, worm dude." He pulls it out of his ear.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's pretty funny.
I like that so far your quotes are just little side moments.
Oh, that, yeah,
aren't necessary but are great.
Oh, I think they all are. So I love those little touches, Nick. You know me.
Number four for me is from Excellent Adventure again. And I don't know why. This line is stuck with me more than anything, where I would just randomly throw it in a conversation and it made no sense. And it only makes sense in the context of the scene in the movie, which is that Bill and Ted let Ted's little brother watch Napoleon, but Napoleon sucks, yeah, so they leave him behind. And that line is, "You ditch Napoleon?" I don't know why that kills me so much. I think, just as a kid, I thought it was so ridiculous that someone is asking their little brother if they ditched the famous French commander Napoleon. So
that's pretty great. Yeah, I could even put Deacon's response to that as another one on this list for me, which would be, "Yeah, he was a total dick."
Which so is good.
So funny. Yeah. I already said my number three, so what else do you got for number three?
My number three is from Face of Music, and just the whole scene is great, but it's when Ted finally makes peace with himself. And it's, of course, his future self who is essentially on his deathbed, which we didn't mention. There's a great post-credit scene with the two old Teds.
Rocking out.
Yeah, so make sure. And all the songs are great in the end credits, so you're going to watch it anyway. But get to that for sure. And when they finally make peace, the young Ted says, "I feel like I never really knew you, Ted." And the old Ted responds, "Oh, that's my fault. I never truly opened myself up to you. The truth is, I looked at you and saw myself." To which young Ted says, "Yeah, I know, me too."
I love that part too. I definitely meant to mention that earlier in our Face the Music talk, but that whole scene with Grandpa, Bill, and Ted, as they're labeled, if you look at the quotes online or script or whatever, I guess it comes from it, they're labeled Grandpa Bill and Grandpa Ted. That whole scene is hilarious to me, and I want to point out Alex Winter's work as an old man in the makeup that he's in, and Keanu Reeves too. But apparently Alex had already had some experience playing an old person from Bogus Journey, because he also played Granny Winter in the hell scene who wants a kiss from him. So, and then I don't know, like I love the little touches here too, where Alex is playing Grandpa Bill and he kind of rolls his eyes in the back of his head and he's shaking his finger as he's talking to young Bill, and he's kind of quibbles his lips a little bit. He's just really overplaying the fact that he's old. That was great. But yeah, those lines between present day Keanu and Grandpa Ted, just really great. That was really fun. But then how he makes peace with himself in the end, which is,
dude,
kind
it's
of
so deep.
It's
too.
Kind of a deep way to talk about like making peace with yourself, but it's so
yeah,
goofy.
Like self-love, right. Self-acceptance. It's a really deep conversation if you think about it.
Right.
And I agree with you. Alex Winter was awesome. I know that he hadn't acted in a while before he did this, and I think he even said he went to some acting classes just to freshen up, but he's great.
He did. Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, I'm glad you had that one on the list.
Awesome. What's your next quote?
All right, so number two for me is also from Bogus Journey. This is where Bill and Ted again have been sent to hell, and Bill is upset at this point. He's upset that they're in hell, and you know, he uses their typical grammar and lingo to express himself, and he says, "This is most non-heinous. And I appreciate this on like a grammatical level too, because when I first watched this, I was like, wait, I was listening to it and reading it as if he was just emphasizing that it's non-heinous, as if he was just saying, this is non-heinous. But the meaning of the word heinous is really bad. This is bad. But if he's saying it's non-heinous, then that means he's saying hell is really good. But apparently, looking at BillandTed.org and some other articles online, you know, I had to do my research to back myself up here. He's using a quadruple negative in the sense that the four nons cancel each other out, but also emphasize the heinousness of the situation. So it's really a very clever use of non-heinous. So I just love how ridiculous they have their own language, and that's just one of the most ridiculous moments in the series for me that he uses that. So yeah, that's my number two. Grammar. Bill and Ted grammar. Teach a class on it.
They got a pretty big vocabulary, the two of them.
Especially Bill. It seems like throughout most of the films, he's the one using the more highfalutin language, you know?
So my second is my only Bogus Journey quote, though I did think there were a lot of great lines, but you gotta go with death, saying, you might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later, you dance with the Reaper. Get down with your bad self. Which, of course, this line was so iconic, and it's not like this movie was an enormous hit, but, you know, it made money. But Robert Alton Harris, who was a car thief, burglar, kidnapper, and murderer, he was executed the year after this movie was released, and he tried to say death's line as his final line on this earth before he was executed. Wow. Though he just barely messed it up. He said, you can be a king or a street sweeper, but everybody dances with the Grim Reaper. So, you know, earlier when you messed it up, he messed it up too. And, you know, it was the last thing he ever said. So don't feel bad.
Cool, cool. That makes me feel much better.
Good, good. That's what I'm here for.
I'm still alive, so...
You're still alive.
Oh, man.
I think we may have the same number one. I'm hoping for it, but maybe we don't. It's just such an iconic line and said so specially.
Yeah.
I'm thinking we're both going to have it.
I think we're going to have it, too. Yeah. So my number one is, of course, Keanu's line. They're in the parking lot of the Circle K, and this is when they first meet Rufus, who comes into their lives via the time-traveling phone booth. And the great delivery, and there's wind blowing in Keanu's face as he says this line, strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
He says it only the way Keanu can. He brings exactly what is needed.
I did not bring it justice there, but yeah, it's so good. The delivery, it's classic. So is this your number one as well?
Oh, you know it, buddy.
Oh,
it's
nice.
It's my number one for sure.
Nice. Yes.
Didn't even have to think about it.
Yeah, same here.
I already knew when I started making the list that it would be there.
It's classic. How could you not?
Even his expression in his eyes, it's just perfect. It's transcendent. It's transcendent, Jordan. It's a transcendent line reading. One of many of Keanu with Whoa and with I Know Kung Fu and with all of his great Point Break lines and Speed lines and John Wick lines that just transcend language.
John Wick had lines?
Man, I'm going to get you to come around to John Wick one day.
I didn't think he talked
about
that
movie. I love those movies. He says stuff.
I know, I know. Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Yes. That was better.
Yeah, I'm going to get there. I'm going to get it. What?
One day we'll get
there. We'll just keep saying it to ourselves. No, what about some runners up here? I had a few other thoughts. Like, I love when they're in... Why do I like all the lines where they're in hell with death? I don't know. What does that say about me, Nick? where they're following death out of the room, and he's like, hey, Bill, don't fear the Reaper. They do the air guitar, and then death goes, I heard that. It's so good.
Oh, I love that the end of Bogus Journey, that William Sadler, they cut around the world to various people watching this broadcast, and cut to like this, even though he's American, they cut to this German family, and they're in their home, and they're watching the broadcast, and it's William Sadler out of his death makeup. I liked it, and it's his real wife and his real daughter with him in the scene. It's great.
I thought I read that he was an Englishman in that scene, not a German.
There you go. He's an Englishman.
I'm sorry, German fans. I think you're all very respectable. But yeah, man. So that's our top five Bill and Ted quotes. Would you like to attempt a movie connection here, Nick? I mean, I've got one if you want to go there. I mean, all things bring us back to Congo in my world, right?
Oh, good Lord. Why are you doing this, Jordan? how does this connect to Congo?
I know how much you love Congo, so that's why.
Love in quotes, meaning loathe, I think was actually what you meant. But right. Okay, so how's it connect?
Normally we do a movie connection between each movie that we watch. So being that the last film that we watched was Congo from 1995. You know what also came out in 95, Nick?
A lot of movies that are way better than Congo.
Debatable. But this movie might be better. At some point, I want to get into it on the show because it is a 90s movie. It's Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight. Guess who's in Demon Knight? Good old William Sadler. Of course, he's Death in Bogus Journey in 91 and Face of Music. So that's a bit of a connection there. He also plays a character named Monroe in 91 in a movie called Rush. Same year as Bogus Journey. And as we know, Monroe was the name of Ernie Hudson in Congo. So it's all connected, Nick. It all comes back to Congo. Don't you love it?
Jordan, it's time for me to go to bed. I don't have time for this foolishness.
All right. Cool, man. Well, thanks for joining me and having this talk about the three Bill and Ted movies. I had a lot of fun. Good stuff.
Good times, man. Good times. These movies are part of the fabric of our lives.
They truly are.
You can thank or blame them.
I wanted to say something bogus there, but I couldn't think what it might be.
There's nothing bogus to say,
There's nothing left to say. Well, yeah, if you enjoyed our show, if you're tuning in for the first time, yeah, catch up with some of our other episodes, like our Congo episode, which is a great movie, which Nick and I both love heartily. We don't disagree about that at all. But no, our next episode after this bonus episode will be my pick. We're going to go back to 1990 and watch Joe versus the Volcano. Nick has also just totally bombed the previous trivia battle that we do every episode so that I could finally win and punish him with the 1997 movie Trojan War, which, come to think of it, especially Bogus Journey, is kind of a Homerian odyssey, right? You know, it's kind of like a hero's journey through these different worlds. And I think we'll get into a little bit of that with Trojan War. You know, it's about a young man played by Will Friedle. Most people know him from Boy Meets World, the older brother, Eric Matthews. And it's a young man trying to find a condom so he can have sex with a girl. And he can't find a condom, so he goes all throughout the city late at night. It's all done within one day. And he's on this journey. He's on this hero's journey to find that condom. Classic 90s movie that maybe not a whole lot of people have seen, but you should watch it. Watch Joe versus the Volcano and come back and join us for next time. Well, until then, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us a rating if you so wish. And you can email us at filmshakepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter or Facebook at 90s Movies Pod. Hope to hear from you guys. We'll catch you next time for more Film Shake.
Take it easy.
And Nick, this is one more thing for you to splice in somewhere, wherever you can, but how could I have forgotten this in my defense of Bogus Journey? But Bogus Journey, man, Bogus Journey is a 90s movie. It is the most 90s-esque out of all three movies. It is from the greatest decade ever of movies. Therefore, it is the best movie out of the three. And you call yourself a Film Shake 90s movie podcast co-host. Come on, how can this not be your favorite? It's from the only decade of film that exists to this show. It's got to be the best.